This afternoon,
our continued study in the book of Hebrews. You want to turn over there to it. In the last chapter, we talked, it was directed about the rest that people would enter into at the end of life. That is, God created heavens and the earth on 6 days. On the seventh day, He rested. He has a rest prepared for all of us who follow in His teachings and follow in the things that God wants us to do. And the apostle now begins to bring to our attention the idea, the subject of the high priest. He touched on it in the 15th verse of the previous chapter when he said, "For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin." So he is now introducing the thought of the high priest to the Hebrew that he's writing to the Jews. Now, this was very important because under the Old Testament, the high priest was the focal position of their religion. He was the one that made sure that religiously everything was accomplished and done according to the Word of God. And as I said last time, if you go over to the book of Leviticus and you read in the book of Leviticus about the things that the priests were to do, perhaps to us it might be a little bit sketchy as to every little detail, but yet the high priest, it was his job to know that detail. It was his job to know how to lead the people spiritually. He was their spiritual leader, even though they wanted a king, and eventually they did get kings. The kings were not the spiritual leader, they were the national leader. The high priest was indeed their spiritual leader, and there was things only the high priest could do for them, and nobody else could. So the thought of the high priest continues on in this chapter, and we'll read the first four verses. "For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins, who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, for that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. And by reason hereof, he ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins. And no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron." So as he directs our attention to the subject of the high priest, he said that a high priest is taken from among men. Every high priest is. He said, and is ordained for men. Not ordained by men, but ordained for men. Now he is speaking of the high priest under the Jewish laws of the Old Testament. He's not speaking about high priests that exist in other countries or in other religions. But the high priests that he's talking about are those that were directed by God to be the spiritual leader of the people. Now, some of the things he says here has a direct relationship to what was going on in the time of Jesus. Because you remember when Jesus was taken to be tried, he was taken to the house of Caiaphas. Now, Caiaphas was the high priest, but then he was also taken to the house of Annas, who was also high priest. Well, that was illegal because under the Old Testament law, you had one high priest and you could only have one. The next one didn't take his place until the previous one passed away. So Aaron was high priest up until the time of his death. And then when Aaron died, then one of his sons became high priest. And that's how the lineage was set up. And that person was ordained of God to have that position. Well, by the time it got to the time of Christ, the Romans and the political leaders of the Jewish people had really entered into the situation of the high priest and were basically given it out as a political position. And so that's why when you read about Jesus and him taken to the house of both high priests, it's because Annas was the high priest. Caiaphas, if I remember right, was his son-in-law or somebody related to him, and he was then given the position of high priest, which he never should have had. So what you had there was the high priest being influenced by politics. But what the Bible's telling us here is that the high priest is ordained of God for men, on the behalf of men, that he can offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. Now that's the position of the high priest. It was something that God set up, and of course you remember the tribe of Levi was the tribe that these high priests would come from, that all the priests came from, and particularly the high priest came from the family of Moses and Aaron and Miriam. And so that's where your high priest came from, was from that family. So that's how it was to be done as long as there was going to be a high priest under the Old Testament. His position, he had to offer these gifts and these sacrifices for sins. He had to make sure that all things that were offered to God were done accordingly to how God wanted it done, that there was no deviation, that he didn't do it his own way, or he didn't do it the way somebody else wanted it done. He did it the way God wanted it done. But he was also an individual that needed to be able to have compassion on his fellow man. And when he speaks here of having compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, he's speaking of his fellow man, of people who fall in sin and people who falter and people who make mistakes. So he himself was compassed about with infirmity. He was a frail human being. He also himself was likened to the same temptations his fellow man was, and he was yet designated as their high priest. He understood what people went through, and when people would come to the temple or come to the tabernacle with a problem, they had sinned, they needed to offer sacrifice, or they needed spiritual guidance, he was able to help them because he himself was perhaps went through some of the same things that the people coming to him were going through. So, as he says in verse 3, and by reason hereof, he ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins. So, this man, appointed by God, on behalf of his fellow man, to be a high priest, is also has the same infirmities of the people that he represents. So not only does he need to offer sacrifice for those people he represents, those people that he has been appointed to be the religious leader over, but he has to offer sacrifice for his own sins. So if you remember the Day of Atonement, and I think that shows us this great picture, because it was on the Day of Atonement, and that comes here coming up in September-October range. I thought I read this year it comes in September. But it's the Yom Kippur. And what he would do now is he would bring an ox down to the temple or the tabernacle, and they would bring two he-goats. He would offer the sacrifice of this bullock. He would go into the Holy of Holy areas. He would go behind the Ark of the Covenant so that he is facing east, and he would sprinkle the blood seven times upon the Ark of the Covenant. And that was for his sins. So before he could even address the sins of the people, he had to first take care of the sins that he himself had committed. And of course, being man, he committed sins, because the Bible says, if we say we have no sin, we're a liar and the truth is not in us. So even as a high priest, he still had sin, and he had to make a sacrifice for it. When he came back out of the tabernacle or the temple, he would then cast lots upon those goats, you remember. One of them would be led off into the wilderness. The other one would be sacrificed for the sins of the people. And then he would take that blood in and repeat what he had done with the blood of the oxen when he went into the Holy of Holy places, and he would face the east, and he would sprinkle the Ark of the Covenant seven times. So, as he's saying here, since he was like the people he represented, it was necessary that he offer sacrifice not only for the people, but for himself as well. And as he says in verse 4, no man takes his honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So God made these appointments through the lineage of Aaron, that these are your high priests. These are the people that are going to be your religious leaders as long as the Old Testament stands. Now, as we said, by the time they get to Jesus, there's been quite a bit of political influence. Things have not worked out the way as God wanted them to, but that's not God's fault. That's the fault of the people who were doing it. But God set up a system that a man didn't step up and say, hey, I want to be the next high priest, or hey, I'm the next high priest. God said, no, it was the lineage that was passed on in Aaron's children all the way down the line. That's why it was so important for them to know their genealogy. And if you've kept up with any modern journalism that's been given out of Israel, you'll know that one of the things they seek is to know what tribe all the people who are Jews today are from. And they're trying to accomplish this by looking at DNA so that they can figure out who is of the tribe of Levi, who's of the tribe of Benjamin, who is the tribe of Judah, and so on and so forth. So it was very important to them in that day and time. But when the temple was destroyed in AD 70, all those records and everything about their lineage basically is gone. They were dispersed throughout the world. They were enslaved. And so that ended the Aaronic priesthood. There was no longer going to be priest appointed after the lineage of Aaron. All that was gone with the end of the Old Testament. So now let's read 5 through 10. So also Christ glorified not himself to be made a high priest, but he that said unto him, Thou art my son, today have I begotten thee. As he saith also in another place, Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death and was heard in that he feared. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Called of God, a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. So in the fifth verse, as what Paul is bringing to the attention of the people he's writing to us today as well, is Christ did not step up and say, I'm automatically high priest. He did not step up and say that he would assume that position. It was given to him by God. Because God, being his father, had appointed the high priest under the Old Testament, so he could appoint the high priest as well under the New Testament. And this he did. He was his son. Now he is born of God. Whereas everything else, everybody else, is created of God, Jesus Christ doesn't fit in that position as being created. He was born of God. So he is the only begotten Son of God. He bears that significant position, and he is his son. So, as he said in another place, in verse 6, he declared him to be a high priest, but not after the Aaronic priesthood, which came, as we said, from the tribe of Levi, which came through the family of Moses, but he was a priest after the order of another individual appointed by God to be priest, and that was Melchizedek. So now we go back to a time prior to the giving of the old law at Mount Sinai. Prior to that, as you know, Abraham was an individual, and Abraham came on the scene about 2,000 years after Adam and 2,000 years before Christ. He is an individual that was chosen to be the father of many nations, and particularly chosen to be the father of the Jewish nation. Abraham went and he offered his son one day, as came out in the sermon last Lord's Day, I believe, that he went out and he sacrificed his son in a certain place up in the Mount Moriah. Quite interestingly, it was in Mount Moriah where Jesus was also sacrificed. And I believe on the very same spot, because God said he would show to Abraham the place. I don't have any reason to doubt or to believe anything different, that it wasn't the same exact place that Calvary eventually would become known as. He takes Isaac to this certain place that he's been given. He prepares the sacrifice, and as we know, he's going to sacrifice his son. And God said, now he stayed his hand, an angel stayed his hand, and he said, now that I know you're not going to withhold your son from me, he said, then I know that you are completely faithful to me, Abraham. And he provided a ram, and the ram was offered for sacrifice. Abraham, near that spot, was a city known as Salem. Salem became known as Jerusalem. When Abraham also went to rescue Lot from the kings of when Sodom and Gomorrah and the other kings had been raided and Lot was taken off as a captive. They came and got Abraham, Abraham and his men, and all of them gathered together and they went to rescue Lot and the family. And when they did, they, of course, offered Abraham the spoils. Abraham wouldn't take them. But Abraham, we are told, paid tithes to this individual of the city of Salem who was known as Melchizedek. Melchizedek carried a very distinguished position in that he was both a king of the city of Salem, but he was also the high priest of the city of Salem. Now, he had to be appointed by God because he was recognized as a high priest because Abraham paid tithe to him. Abraham wouldn't have paid tithe to a pagan high priest of some place. So we know that in the city of Salem, God had appointed this particular individual to be a king and to be a high priest. And obviously, as God looks way into the future and down the road, as we don't have that ability to do, he was doing so to set the stage for the priesthood that his son would be named after or appointed after. And the reason that his son is appointed after Melchizedek and not after the Aaronic priesthood is two reasons. One, Jesus, to be a king of the Jew, had to be born of the tribe of Judah. And so he couldn't have been born of the tribe of Levi, because out of the tribe of Levi is where the priest came from. It was important that he be recognized as king of the Jews. It was so declared twice in his life that he was king of the Jews. Well, really, on the time that he entered into Jerusalem, riding upon the colt, and they had the palm fronds laid out, and they cried unto him. So really, the people accepted him as king, but he was declared by the wise men at his birth when they went to Herod and said, "Where is he that's born king of the Jew?" And then at his death, when Pilate posted above his head the inscription that said, "This is the king of the Jews." So he was recognized as being the king of the Jews. But to be king, he had to come from the tribe of Judah. So in order to be high priest, he had to be appointed after a different order than those of the Levitical priesthood or the Aaronic high priest. And so God had set up this individual known as Melchizedek to fulfill that position. So Jesus is appointed after the order of Melchizedek. Now, as we read on in Hebrews, we'll get deeper into this character of Melchizedek, but we don't know a lot about him. And what that means is that we don't know when Melchizedek was born nor when he died, and we don't know a great deal about him. So that's what we are told here in the book of Hebrews, that he is appointed after this individual. "Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, because Melchizedek was without beginning and without end. We know not of his birth or of his death. In the days of his flesh," now he's talking about Jesus. He's talking about the Son of God, even though he stopped there after he said in verse 5, "Today have I begotten thee," and then he said in another place that he was appointed high priest after the order of Melchizedek. He's still on the thought of Jesus, who in the days of his flesh, that's when he came to this earth, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears, that's when he was in the garden praying the night that he was betrayed. "And he was praying to him that was able to save him from the death that was coming upon him, and was heard in that he feared." So as we have talked about on many occasions, Jesus prayed that that cup pass from him. And it was not only, I think, the humiliation, it was not only the torture, it was not only the pain, it was not only the people leaving him and him being left alone, but it was the fact that he was going to suffer being separated from the Father. And he had never, ever known that. And now he was going to be, and for 3 hours on the cross, he indeed was. So he prayed to God, who was able to save him from that cup, but yet he placed it all in God's hands. He said, "Nevertheless, not as my will, but thine be done." So though he were a son, in verse 8, he learned obedience by all the things that he suffered. He suffered greatly and tremendously. He suffered rejection by his people. He suffered abandonment by his disciples. He suffered torture, he suffered beating, he suffered humiliation, he suffered pain and sorrow, and he suffered being separated from God. But he went through all of that, and that made him perfect, complete. He became the author of our eternal salvation to all of them that will obey him. So Jesus earned that position. Not only was it a position that God gave to him, not only was he, because he was born the Son of God, but also the fact that because he did everything according to the will of God and what God wanted, he earned it. He did everything necessary that he could become our high priest today. And he became perfect, complete in all things, and became the author of our salvation eternally because he obeyed God. So in verse 10, as he says, he was called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Why is this important? Well, it's important because the people that Paul is writing to, they're over here saying, well, under our old system, we had a high priest. Paul's saying, well, under the New Testament, you have a high priest too. You're not lacking in anything. You had a high priest over here that was appointed after a lineage of men that eventually would come to an end. Over here, you've got a high priest much superior. He is the only begotten Son of God, and he is appointed to that position after the order of Melchizedek, who was both king and priest. The remaining of the chapter, verses 11 through 14. Of whom we have many things to say, and hard to be uttered, seeing ye are dull of hearing. For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. So Paul now wraps it up by telling them here at this point, there's a lot of things that you need to know, that you need to be told and you need to understand, but at this point you're just not ready. We're just not to that point. Now that'd be like going into a classroom where children just learn to add and subtract and try to throw fractions at them. It would be something that they couldn't grasp. It's something above and beyond. They haven't been brought up to that level. They haven't been taught step by step to get them to that point. So he's saying that about the Hebrews here that he's writing to. There's a lot of things yet to be said. Right now, he says, for when for the time ye ought to be teachers, then you need have one actually that needs to teach you. So in other words, you're in need of being taught. You knew the Old Testament, you knew the old law, you knew the old system. But now you've got to be taught the new. You got to be taught the New Testament and all these things that are under Christ. So these principles have got to be laid down. We've got to go slow about this. You need the milk of the Word in order to grow up so that you can accept the strong part of the Word, or the strong meat. As everyone, he says, that uses milk in verse 13, they're unskillful in the Word of righteousness because they're a babe. So you've got to go through that time of learning. You've got to read. You've got to study. You've got to be taught. And that's what Paul says we're going to do. Strong meat, it does belong to those that are of full age. He compares the growth of a child that starts out with milk and grows into an adult and is able to eat solid foods, but at first they're not, and they only have milk to feed upon. So he says you've come to that point now that you may have been strong in the Old Testament, but yet now you've got to be taught the new, and you're just babes in this, and we've got to lay the principle, and we can go on further from there. That brings conclusion tonight in the fifth chapter of the book of Hebrews. Be one this evening. Won't you come while we stand and sing?